Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
I have a sneaking suspicion you just peeked the crap out of that mic, but maybe not. I'm here. I'm excited.
Welcome to Masters of Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, and this is my host, Ben Bateman. In case that peaked, I need to use that one instead.
Excellent. I'm here too, guys. I'm excited. We're back. Yeah, it was a long week. We were in Dallas. We had an exciting week at Toy Fair.
Toy preview.
Yeah. A lot of fun stuff happened. We ate a lot of meals in the cafeteria and their bistro. This guy became a bistro boy.
That's a weird inside joke that none of you are going to understand because I went to get food and it took longer.
Yeah, and then on the last day, Alex and I ate at the bistro, so technically I'm also a bistro boy. We can move on from this story.
This is not something that we should share with the world. So today we're doing our set review. So last week, we released the first half video of the set review. We went through the first X cards that included stuff like Assassin's Trophy and King of Autumn, or Knight of Autumn. Never going to say it right.
King of the Autumn.
and obviously a lot of good cards. There's some spicier boys on this side. What's cool is that we just got past the first weekend of the set being legal, so we're starting to actually see what cards are seeing play in Modern already, what cards are maybe not getting there, what cards might get there, but we haven't seen it yet, as well as cards seeing play in Standard, which is a little bit of a hint of what cards are at least playable that we maybe would have been cold on or hot on either way.
So there's a lot to talk about. That will be today's episode. We should be going through the final, probably 20 or 30 cards.
We did record this already at one point, and we lost that. So there's going to be a few moments that we talk about, like, retroactively what we said the first time. The one sad thing is I think I shot called some cards being good, and now they're good. But now it's not shot calling because they're being good.
He didn't shot call.
I always shot call. Yeah. That's my main thing. Finger gun, shot calling, dancing like a robot thing when I'm explaining concepts.
Yeah.
Those are my main moves. Saying words incorrectly.
Yeah. Strong. Strong moves. So, yes, guys, we're here. That's the Masters of Modern podcast. There's a lot to talk about. First and foremost, guys, if you want to follow along with us, you can find the podcast on Twitter at the MMCast. You can find me personally at Ben Bateman Media.
We are live streaming this. I'm at Cass Wiley on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else. But we are live streaming this, so you should go to YouTube, subscribe to us. We launched a YouTube channel. There are video versions of this released every week. We stream earlier in the week, and then we release a video version that's a little bit more clean and edited at the back end of the week. So Jeff and people on the chat, thank you guys for watching right now live. And subscribe, leave comments, do all those good things. Share the video to the world.
Yeah, exactly, guys. Thank you so much. As Alex mentioned, the biggest piece of help you can give us is to help grow this YouTube channel, because it's our big forward movement that we're doing. So you said live streaming. I wanted to comment on that and make fun of you, but you moved on so quickly. Now I'm going back.
That's the key to the Alex Kessler lifestyle is you make mistakes, but if you go really quick past that mistake, no one can catch up. So first card.
Yes.
Pelt Collector.
Oh yeah, Pelt Collector. It's like a weird Experiment One clone.
Yeah, it's better than Experiment One, but it is close. It's one green for a 1/1 elf warrior. Whenever another creature you control enters the battlefield or dies, if that creature's power is greater than Pelt Collector's, put a +1/+1 counter on Pelt Collector. As long as Pelt Collector has 3 or more +1/+1 counters, it has trample. So you lose the ability to regenerate it, but what you gain is just this guy gets much bigger quicker because it's on enter and death triggers. So you can do something like, and there's a zoo deck currently playing it that uses Vexing Devil alongside that allows you to kind of get both sides. Either you get a 3/3 off of a Vexing Devil and they take damage, or you get a Vexing Devil and a 2/2. So for one. So Pelt Collector kind of puts them in a worst decision process.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And I do believe actually Trample is probably just better than regeneration off of Experiment One, because of the fact that, like, this is a one drop, so even if they remove it, you're 1/1ing them and you're equal on mana, versus now, like, you're going to get damage in because Trample is so good against anything that blocks it.
Is that deck playing Claim Fame?
We and Michael were talking about it. I don't believe that, because it's a zoo deck, so it's playing white. I think there is a version of it that could play Claim Fame. That sounds really good.
It should. I mean, because, like, if you figure the trample works really, really, really well with the +2/+0.
Right.
So you get both halves really well. And, like, the whole idea of getting your Vexing Devil trigger on both ends, getting it back for one because you're getting both triggers, that sounds very powerful.
And I always liked it. I always liked the fame part of it in zoo decks, that, like, late game you're going to be drawing these 1/1s. Like, Pelt Collector as a late game draw is not that good. But if you have that in your graveyard, worst case scenario, you're, like, lightning elementaling them, where you just get like a 3-1 for one.
I mean, like, Vexing Devil with Claim Fame is just powerful. Like, right. It just means that late in the game, for one black, they're gonna either take 4 damage or they're gonna have to deal with a hasted 6-3.
Right.
Like, it's pretty hard. So.
And then, like, you get weird, like, other cards in Jund. You get that Ooze, the one-drop Ooze that, like, gets +1/+1 for if you control a Swamp, and +1/+1 if you control a 4.
Oh, yeah, Blood Hall Ooze. Blood Hall Ooze, yeah. That I love. You know, I love that card.
Yeah.
Didn't I build, like, a Blood Hall Ooze deck at one point?
Yes, you did. That's why I'm bringing it up. Yeah. Well, it was, like, when Jund lost Bloodbraid Elf, it was one of the cards that people were playing in there as well, because they were, like, trying to make it more aggressive. So there's been aggressive Jund decks playing Blood Hall Ooze for a while.
How did I build the Blood Hall Ooze deck? Oh, I put Blood Hall Ooze in a deck with Winding Constrictor, so because it's both black and green, and it doubles the counters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was sweet. That was super sweet.
And Winding Constrictor is really good with Pell Collector.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. Next card. Mission Briefing. So Mission Briefing is obviously one that everyone's been talking about. It's blue, instant, surveil 2, then choose an instant or sorcery card in your graveyard. You may cast that card this turn. If that card would be put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead. To surveil 2, look at the top. Everyone knows how to surveil. So this card's really interesting. Now, after weekend 1, it was one of the big, like, misses in the standard tournaments. It wasn't seeing a lot of play this weekend, so that's, you know, a thing to pay attention to. But, I think that something that I missed until I started playing with this card on Arena recently is it can target itself. So for decks like that you're trying to get spells off, or you just want to get more surveil off of it, you can kind of chain them into themselves, which is really powerful. And then on top of that, I think just there is value to this card being an instant that you can surveil off of. I think there's more value to this card than it necessarily is getting credit for, but I do think it's much worse than the world thought it was.
Well, okay, so like I think there's two sides to this card. One of them is that surveil as a keyword ability is still being properly evaluated. And actually, coming up at the end of the episode, Alex and I are going to rank the 5 guild mechanics from this set.
Right.
We're going to talk about our favorites. But I do think that Surveil is an interesting one. Because your ability to kind of like semi-scry, but also semi-dredge at the same time, as usually a marginal effect where you're getting something else at the same time, is kind of way better than I think it seems on surface value.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did a poll earlier last week, I believe, where I asked how much surveil is worth of a card, and people were having a lot of trouble really evaluating that, because surveil 1, if you mill any like a Lingering Souls, is worth a card. But like, so what attachment does it where it'd be like, would be worth playing like a 1 mana surveil 3? Is that surveil 3 worth a single card to play off of it? And like, it's hard to evaluate. I do think Surveil 2 plus effect is definitely worth the effort.
So this card to me feels like it's somewhere between a Snapcaster Mage and a Twin Cast. That's like where the power level fits. It's like not as good.
Very wide.
Well, but okay, so what I mean by that is traditionally, every one of us that has ever played a spell deck has looked at a Twin Cast or Reverberate and been like, okay, like Fork was good in its day. There's something good you can do with this. Like there is. Like there are things. It's instant speed. It's 2 mana. There are cool things. Obviously, Snapcaster Mage is way better. This is just, it's not quite one, it's not quite the other. Like, you still need to have something good in your graveyard and the mana for this to be good, and you're not left for the body.
Like, something that Snapcaster Mage doesn't do is, like, this on turn 3, if you haven't cast a spell yet, does help you find that second spell. And being able to play this late game, like, on turn 2 just to, like, filter cards and make sure your draw on turn 3 is better. Something like for instance, I think this is really good in decks that are playing Terminus, because you can, at the end of your opponent's turn, set a Terminus basically on top of your deck so that you can draw it on your next turn. Like, using it as just a scry 2 at instant speed as a worst-case scenario mode isn't, like, the best, but I've played a lot of cards badly. So,
using Surveil as a miracle setup at instant speed, this card is interesting for that. I agree. It's just all it is like the moments that it's great, it's going to be great, and the moments that it's bad, it's going to be like, why am I playing this card?
Sure.
Whereas like Snapcaster Mage is always reasonable, because even just a flash 2 on turn 2 in most decks is like you can do something with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at the chat, seeing if there's anything else. Cool. The other thing, like, you know, you've been, and there's going to be other cards we talk about in this set, you've been messing around with a Life from the Loam kind of
Know
Yourself spells deck. I do also think this is good in that type of deck where you're getting the advantage of, like, it's a spell, so it triggers spells. It gets other spells into your graveyard. It can cast some of those spells in your graveyard or like, some of your low-impact spells that you were playing, like, ways you were discarding cards. And so I think there's value there as well.
Agreed.
Cool. Next, Thousand Year Storm. Four blue red enchantment. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, copy it for each other instant and sorcery spell you've cast before it. This turn, you may choose new targets for the copies.
This was my pre-release foil. Oh, Alex and I played in the pre-release together. That was fun. We haven't, yeah. like, I don't think I can count. I think I can count on one hand the number of times that you and I have been in a public setting playing Magic together in the last 12 months. I think we have played separately so many times.
Yeah.
Or never at the same events.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're like never in the country when I'm at an event.
Right. Oh, I mean, I can count on one hand the number of pre-releases I've done in the United States on one hand in the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's been brutal. So anyway, I opened this card at the pre-release. You had a way, way better pre-release foil, if I remember correctly.
It was Amara. Yeah. Not Tandris. It's whatever her name is.
Significantly better. And I almost convinced myself to play this card because I was playing an Izzet deck. But it just didn't seem reasonable.
I think this card's dope. I think in limited, I would like in if I had this in my pool, I would have slam played it just because it's like dumb, and that's the point of a pre-release is the play cards like this. I think that in modern, you know, I've been on a ban grape shot train for a long time now. Not because I think it's like dominating the format in any way, but I think that it forces Storm or puts Storm in a position of playing on a level that makes it uninteractive for any player that's not playing black or green, blue. And, you know, it has other Storm win conditions out there. And the more Storm win conditions that are created, the better because of that reason. Like, there are cards I think that could be unbanned if it was Grape Shot was was banned, specifically Preordained. So giving another win condition to Storm. Now, I don't think this is as good as, say, necessarily Empty the Warrens or Aether Flux Reservoir or even Dragonstorm. One of the reasons I like all those is that all those are interacted with cards that aren't just, you know, blue is the only card color that can interact with things on the stack, really. And so giving red the ability to destroy an artifact or any board wipe to be able to destroy Empty the Warrens, I think is better for Storm. This doesn't really do that, though.
I wish that Battle Bond reverse Aetherflux Reservoir. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I wish that thing existed and we could play it.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
This card is fine. It's just like what this reminds me of a little bit is Hive Pack decks. You get up to six and then you have a spell to like win. And generally speaking, those Hive Pack decks want two spells. So
and I think Hive Pack, like, Hive Mind is just a better card than this.
Right. Like Hive Mind, just you don't need like the right combination of spells. You just like need one of your 12 packs that you're playing in the deck, and then you probably just win. So, yeah, but that's like very similar to what this feels like.
Right. Boop. Next is Venerated Loxodon. Convoke 4 and a white Elephant Cleric, 4/4. When it enters the battlefield, all creatures that were used to convoke it into play get a +1/+1 counter. Two things on this. One, it's seeing play. It, like right now, the two big front runners from Standard are white green tokens and mono red. Sorry.
Yep.
And this is a key part of that deck. The fact that it can make all those 1/1 white lifelink Standard tokens get bigger when you play it. In Modern, this is a card that gameplay isn't something that's been unheard of. Like, playing this in a deck that then gives all your 1/1s a pump, and then you have this for almost a free spell. Convoke is something to always pay attention to once it's seeing play in Standard, because those cards have often translated to being played in Modern.
Yeah, I think this card's sweet. I mean, this plays well with, like, a bunch of Modern cards. Specifically, Lingering Souls is the best one that comes to mind for me.
I really like it with Kitchen Finks, because reset the counter with it with a Kitchen Finks. Like, that's the type of deck I think can also be seeing play, and that's that deck that is already built to take advantage of Convoke, and like you can make your birds 1/2s instead of 1/1. Like, you like the fact that it can pump different creatures you have in those type of decks is really interesting. Now
it's also a five mana, which means that push doesn't kill it.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Right. There's like weird things that it dodges in cool ways. I think it's something that could see play.
It is dope, the idea of your four spirit tokens from Lingering Souls all becoming 2/2 flyers to cast this thing.
Yeah.
That sounds like kind of bonkers, right?
Goblin Banneret. This is one red for a Goblin Soldier. It's a 1/1. It has Mentor, and when you can pay a red and a colorless to give it +2/+2 until end of turn, which allows it to then mentor things.
+2/+0 would not be a red ability.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I think that it's another one drop goblin that's relevant. Like, it has abilities. You know, there it is powerful in different ways. The one drop, 1/1 red creature that has upside is now becoming kind of a staple of Magic. And does this compare to other ones is going to be interesting. But the fact that it's good late game, you know, always something to pay attention to, and it's decent early game is, you know, it's good. I don't think it's quite there, but goblins is slowly getting enough pieces. The fact that it's a goblin makes it just that much more relevant.
It's funny that that BOMAC Courier was printed, and we were all like, "Oh yeah, the card's pretty good." And then now you look at the card, and you're like, "It's one of the most busted, ridiculous one drops ever." And it's like, it's now setting the standard that like that's just okay. You can just print really, really, really high upside 1/1s for one.
Yeah,
yeah, that card's nuts.
I mean, it's fine. I don't know if it's like, I think you're giving it more
Courier
credit.
BOMAC Courier is like really good, and I think that card. I think the further we get from it being printed, the more people are realizing how good it is. Michael, scale of 1 to 10, how good is BOMAC Courier? All time.
He's listening to the audio delayed, so he's not going to hear that.
He's not going to hear me for a second? BOMAC Courier, how good? Scale of 1 to 10, all time one drops.
All time one drops?
He ran a Magic store for many years. We're waiting. He knows all of Magic.
I feel like it's fine. It's just fine.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's 2 points above average. That's really good.
Yeah, but like...
There's a lot of one drops in Modern. I mean, especially in red decks, because you're only playing in a red deck. You got, like, Goblin Guide and...
Like, on the, like...
Monastery Swift Spear.
If you took a test and you got a 7, you wouldn't be happy.
Okay. We're now talking to somebody off mic who's not agreeing with me totally. Let's move on.
All right. You tried bribing the audience. Unmoored Ego, 1 blue-black, sorcery, choose a card name, search your opponent's graveyard, hand, and library for up to 4 cards with that name, and exile them. That player shuffles their library. Then they draw a card for each card exiled this way from their hand.
It's like a weird lobotomy effect. It's cheaper. I mean, they've been leaning into these specific 3-mana lobotomies now for a little while.
When was the last 3-mana lobotomy?
The black one from...
That was 4-mana.
No. It was black, 1 for a creature,
Dad.
I think. What?
Dad? You're thinking of Dad? The Kieran's Dad's Memorial or whatever?
No. It was from... It was their preview card on a Top Level podcast. It was black, 1. It was like a couple years ago. If you keep talking, I'll find out what it
is. Okay. I do actually think this is the best... That's the dad card that has a picture of Kieran on it.
He said Lost Legacy. Alex is going to explain this card, and I'm going to find out.
I do think this is the best one printed in a long time. I think being 3-mana is really good, and it gets kind of everything you need to. I think the conversation between this and Slaughter Games is the real ones to be having. Obviously, Surgical Extraction is the best version of this, but that has specific needs, and this helps in matchups that isn't good against. So, for instance, Tron. and so Unmoored Ego being blue-black, though, is its big negative. Like, there are significantly less blue-black decks in Modern seeing play than there are red-black ones, and historically and currently.
Infinite Obliteration is the card. It's actually from Origins. It's longer ago than I realized, but...
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, but it's black, 1, and it's search for a creature card. So I'm just saying, now in the last few years, these effects used to only cost 4. So back in the old days, like in the Urza's days.
Extirpate's 1-drop. Yeah,
that's like Planar Chaos, but like in the old days, Lobotomy is the original.
Sure.
And you had all the ones from the Urza
Jester's
Saga.
Was it Jester's Cap? The original? I think it is.
4, sack for 3.
Yeah, and do this.
Because you have all the ones from the Urza sets, like Quash and Sowing Salt and Scour. And so like that whole cycle was all 4-drops. So then over the years, they've pushed it. Extirpate was interesting. Surgical was interesting. And now it seems like they're finding ways to just make them cost 3.
Yeah, and I think Surgical Extraction, this and Slaughter Games are the 3 best ones in Modern and the ones that you should be playing, and there's different reasons to play each of them. If you're in blue-black, this is probably better than Slaughter Games. I think being counterable is less important than getting out a turn earlier, because that's when people are comboing off. I think that the fact that it's blue-black is the negative compared to red-black.
One of the interesting things about this card is that you can name a basic land.
Yep.
It's one of the only cards ever in history that has allowed you to name a basic land.
Right, because you can get up to 4 of that card.
And it can draw 4 cards.
I don't know if that's super relevant in Modern, though. How many decks need basic lands?
Not that many, but here's what's interesting about it. So this particular effect, getting 4 of the same basic land, is probably not relevant. But if you start to think about the sheer number of cards that your opponent wants to search for a basic land with, so Ghost Quarter, Field of Ruin, Path to Exile, Assassin's Trophy... they're going further and further down that road. So the more times now that you're going to be able to strip basics out of your opponent's deck and then just have strip mines is like a thing to pay attention to. I don't know if it's a deck, but like...
Yeah, I guess my issue there is it's the up to four issue, and most cards that make people search for basics are searching for anyone. Now, you know, against someone that's like playing Scapeshift, that's kind of interesting because you can just get all of the mountains out of their deck so that they can't actually Scapeshift you. But in general, I feel like people are playing somewhere between 5 and 7, and you getting the right basic to
and trading the basics out of their deck for them to draw four cards.
Yeah,
is like
yeah. I feel like I would much rather like name like Urza's Tower.
Yeah, no. My point was not that that's the deck. I'm just saying,
like, ad nauseum.
How many decks? How many cards have you ever seen that allow you to name a basic land? Almost none ever.
Sure.
So it's I always say this, and I'll say it time and time again. When there's something that hasn't been done before or something unique, pay attention to it because it very often is the thing that we miss that turns a card into being a powerhouse later on. It happens all the time.
Sure.
New card types, anything.
All right. Next card. Conclave Tribunal. This is a 3 and a white enchantment. You can convoke it. It's Oblivion Ring, which lets you exile a non-land permanent and then until it leaves play, and then it comes back. This is, I think, playable. I think, like, same reason I said earlier, just like convoke spells are important to pay attention to because there's a cost reduction mechanic. So the fact that you can get a 1-mana O-ring in play, like that, or a free O-ring, is like very good.
And the fact that it's convoke, the most important part of it is that you're able to pay the colored symbol with your colored creatures, as that is often cost reduction doesn't allow you to hit that last piece. So like
sure.
Delve, you have to pay the colored mana.
Right.
So like this being a thing that you can just like, I'll tap out, make a bunch of creatures, then tap my creatures that have summoning sickness to do something with them.
Sure.
Is like getting a free spell.
Yeah, yeah. I think the thing that is most the thing about Convoke that I think always ends up being like, oh, this is like really powerful, is the fact that you can tap creatures that would have summoning sickness. It's not like they become land or elves and you have to wait till they don't. They're no longer summoning sick. You can take advantage of these creatures that maybe would have blocked, and that's it.
Maybe this should go into my Electromancer Lingering Souls deck. So I could go turn 2 Electromancer, turn 3 Souls, Flashback Souls, cast Conclave Tribunal for free. Oh, the value.
Necrotic Wound, 1 black, instant, undergrowth. Target creature gets -X/-X until end of turn, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard. If that creature would die this turn, exile it instead. The two key things to this is that it exiles and that it gives -X/-X, so it kills like random things that are indestructible, for instance, or have regenerate.
It doesn't do anything unless you have creatures in your yard.
Correct.
Which is a shame.
Yeah. I think this will see more play in Modern than Isolate will.
Yeah, and this will also see more play in Modern than like fringe cards that have been really good and like you wonder if they would, like when Ulcerate got printed and you're like, oh, that's pretty good but not quite
right,
and like this will be really good in the decks that's good in, and otherwise we'll never see any play.
If we get to a point where we need black needs to be able to exile things for 1 mana and it's a deck that gets like Jund where it can get creatures into its graveyard pretty well, I could see it happening. Next is Drowned Secrets, 1 enchantment. Whenever you cast a blue spell, target player puts the top 2 cards of their library into their graveyard. There's a few key things on this card. One is that it's blue spell, so it's any blue card, including secondary and tertiary Drowned Secrets that you draw and play. So the fact that you can kind of chain them into each other, and then once you have 2 in play, every other mill card you have goes off, is both relevant on where I'm, you know, generally paying attention to, where I'm self-milling myself, and where you're generally paying attention to, where you're milling your opponents. So why don't you talk about why this is good in milling your opponents?
Well, there's multiple ways to do it. I mean, there's multiple things here that are interesting. You mentioned Blue Spell, which is really relevant for multiple copies of Drowned Secrets. Also for the fact that, like, now your Hedron Crab mills when you play Hedron
right.
Crab, if this is already in play. Starting, like, a hand with 2 of these in your opening hand is not the best thing, but it does mean that you're turbocharged for the rest of the game.
In Modern, it does mean that like you're going to have to weirdly take turns off to get both of them in the play. But if you're playing a deck that needs these as an engine in your deck in the play, having 2 of them is insane. Like I'm currently playing a Arclight Phoenix, and we'll talk about Arclight Phoenix later in the thing in Standard, and it's playing 4 of these. And just like the power level I have when I have more than 1 of these in play is so much higher than having none.
What's the name? I'm just looking it up right now. I'm trying to find it, but is it? Yeah, Dream Twist is the card that I thought of when I saw this, where I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting that Dream Twist now, if you have 1 of these in play, becomes With one in play, it becomes Glimpse for three.
Yeah.
With two in play, it starts to get nuts.
Right.
And the fact that you can put this in your own graveyard and like wait for it until late in the game when you have multiples of these is like, and because it costs one, it means that on turn three, if you play one of these, then you still have that in your hand to play it.
Right.
So then it's like mill seven.
Well, and it turns like Glimpse into mill 12. It turns the one mana one that mill seven into mill nine. Like it makes all of your mill cards, and it makes all your like Ops and Serum Visions or other random blue things you're playing into like really
Jace's Phantasms. It turns Thought Scour into mill four draw.
Right.
For one.
So like I think there's a lot in the mill decks that exist. I think this is theoretically playable. And then I think in self mill decks, it has potential as well. Like it has a like if decks were like, oh man, I wish I had eight Hedron Crabs, I think this is a card that takes advantage of that.
Yeah, I also have always been a big fan of in the mill deck. There's like specific cards that reference card types in your opponent's graveyards that like if you were to do like for instance, like in your sideboard, you would be stacked like, okay, I'll have Phantasms for some matchups where I'm going to need like a big fat blocker, or I'm going to have to close it out with that.
Sure.
Right. Or you'll have like you could splash red and play Slag Fiend against Affinity where you're like, okay, so now I'll get like a 12-12 creature for one because like, I'm just milling my opponent.
Well, I think another place to pay attention to is this is really good if you're on a Delirium game plan. I don't have encyclopedic knowledge of what cards have Delirium, but I know that there is a lot of them that probably are fine in self-mill strategies or even milling your opponent strategies. And the fact that getting this into your graveyard just turns on Delirium that much quicker, or other cards that count how many creature types or card types are in your graveyard, is relevant as well. Midnight Reaper, 2 and a black, Zombie Knight, whenever a non-creature token you control dies, Midnight Reaper deals 1 damage to you when you draw a card.
For those on audio, it's whenever a non-token creature. You said non-creature token.
Oh.
Which is impossible because they don't exist.
That's not true. Clue tokens.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Treasure tokens.
Okay.
There's a lot of those now.
But they would never die.
Landmine tokens.
But they wouldn't die.
They get destroyed.
Don't argue this. You're wrong.
Midnight Reaper is 2 and a black, Zombie Knight, 3/2, and it does that thing. The key here is that it's a zombie and that with Gravecrawler, you can now, with 2 cards and a sack outlet, so 3 cards, loop it instead of before where it was you had to have like this plus a Gravecrawler plus a thing that triggers off of die triggers. Like it kind of is condensing that package into something that's more and more playable.
Maybe
I still don't know if it's there yet.
Greater Gargadon, anyone?
Maybe.
Has Gargadon gone up? Because I feel like it gets talked about all the time.
I think it did.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's at right now, but I think it did a little bit. Unless it got reprinted.
It was reprinted in Modern Masters 1.
Yeah, but I don't think it's been since then.
Since then? That was like 5 years ago. Yeah. I'll look it up. You keep talking. Gargadons are still less than $5. That's crazy.
People keep talking about missions. What?
That feels like a pickup. I can't believe that's only $4.65.
Yeah, you probably pick it up. At some point, it's going to be good, right? All right, next card. Get out of here, Midnight Reaper. All right, so this card, we kind of, in our pre-version of this, when we talked about it, we were kind of down on it, but like it actually just saw a ton of play this weekend in Standard.
Really?
We were like, maybe, so let's maybe it plus the fact that it actually saw play, which like at that time I would have maybe been like, this will never see play.
But in Standard.
Yeah, correct. Experimental Frenzy, 3 red enchantment. You may look at the top card of your library at any time. You may play the top card of your library. You may cast. You can't play cards from your hand. You can play 4 red to destroy Experimental Frenzy. It's an enchantment. The fact that you can use this to kind of chain off cards off the top of your deck is like relevant. And there's enough card manipulation in the game to like make it so you can maybe get rid of the lands once you get them on top of your deck. And the fact that if you get stuff stuck in your hand that you need, you can destroy it later at instant speed helps. It's just like it's just a good red card draw spell. It's seeing play in the mono red decks. And we talked about it last week in Storm where, you know, having this in play in a Storm deck once your hand is gone, and you kind of want to discard your cards in your hand anyways, this allows you to kind of just cycle through cards on the top at a pretty decent rate.
Yeah, this card's fine. It's interesting. It's like a little more expensive than I would like it to be for its costs, but I could see this being a standard card. I have a hard time imagining breaking through in Modern, unless you could find some way to reduce the costs of things to like chain it like as part of some engine.
But, sure.
Yeah.
But that's, I think that's the point. Like, well, in Storm, they do that. They play Electromancers. All right. Next, Ritual of Soot. Soot.
Ritual of Soot.
Yeah.
I love
Suits.
Ben,
you're not supposed to make fun of the way people say words because it just means that they learned it through reading, which makes them smarter than everyone else.
But can I make fun of the way you say words?
Yeah, fine. Ritual of Soot. 2 black-black sorcery. Destroy all creatures with converted mana cost 3 or less. Cool. So the thing with this card is right now we live in a world where one of the best decks in the format is good at making it. So if you have a card that is consistently named the same thing, it is harder to cast it, named Humans. And the fact that you can now play like two Damnations and one this is good against Humans. And the last half of that fact is you can play this and keep your Tasker in play or keep your Gurmag Anglers in play. The fact that this is a pretty good one-sided board wipe if you're playing either of those cards is relevant.
Yeah, I mean, CMC in Modern is traditionally very low, so right. Like this is super relevant in that way. It's, like you said, it's a fringe card that'll see probably play as part of like the equivalent of like a gifts package, but like it won't be searched for by gifts, but like the cards with different names idea.
Yeah.
That's well, like the I most mean, likely.
Meddling Mage is a tier one card in Modern, yeah. And this is good against Meddling Mage because it is not Damnation.
Definitely.
Someone really likes the video content, and we're going to keep up the good work. Thank you, Benjamin. Well, are you just complimenting us?
That's me in the chat.
Okay. He has a different last name than you. cool. All right. Before we get into the next card, I do want to do a few more shout-outs. This is the mid-cycle commercial. The first one is make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone. Josh is doing awesome content there every week. Plus, they do game nights, which is also fantastic. Craig was on the last one, friend of the cast. They were doing some Guilds of Ravnica Commander, and definitely was a great video. And lastly, Josh is actually drafting Modern sets and then playing Modern out of them. It's the most Modern content Josh has ever done. So we've been, you know, discussing key strats on how he should be drafting sets. So definitely check that out. So far, he's got M11 and some other good stuff. So definitely keep an eye on that. And then make sure to, once again, subscribe on YouTube. I'm going to keep bringing it up because we're live streaming. All the people watching right now, subscribe, comment, shout it out. Love you guys. Thanks for watching.
Yeah, that's funny. I'm on the text thread for the Josh's Modern discussion with you.
Uh-huh.
And it's supposed to be with me also, but I have added nothing because I missed initially when he described what the concept was. I like didn't watch the video. I was like, I'll get to this. And then by the time that I was there, you had already like conversed so much that I was like, I'll never match up.
Well,
with this.
He like has M11, so he has all the check lands and he has like Titans, but he has Mana Leak and Lightning Bolt, which like M11's an insane set. Yeah. He has all the ley lines. Like what's in M11 is bonkers. Even like
the Chalice, by the way, that tournament.
The tournament. It's called the Chalice. So look up the Chalice.
Card Kingdom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ashlyn Rose is on it. Like, there's a bunch of big streamers on it. And then they're drafting sets, and then they'll actually draft the set. But then they're drafting it like fantasy football. So then they make a block constructed debt out of a block they make out of a first, second, and third set. So he started with Innistrad and M11. So he's got like Liliana, Snapcaster Mage. He has Snap Bolt.
I mean,
like, that's the thing he can do.
And he has Delver. He has Delver.
What
are
we building off of Delver?
Delver, Snap Bolt, Leak. Like, oh. I would love to play that deck.
And then he's got Electrolyze now because I think he got Guild Pack.
But he doesn't have any good cantrips, right?
No, he's got Serum Visions.
Because
No. He has Preordain.
Oh, right.
The ban list doesn't count. He has Preordain.
Oh.
Ban list doesn't count?
No. That's why, like, World Wake is a set that you want to pick because you get Jace and Stoneforge Mystic.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Next card, Guild Summit. Guild Summit has Battlefield, you draw cards because you tap Gates. The point of this card is I wanted to talk about Gates. When it enters play, you may tap any untapped Gates, and you draw a card for each Gate you tap. And then whenever a Gate after that enters play, you draw a card.
And it costs one blue, two colorless, and it's an enchantment.
By the end of this block, we're going to have a lot of Gate tribal cards consistently throughout. And I think that we are getting closer and closer to the point where we're looking at Maze's End as a weird win condition that exists in the format. Now, I don't know if it's going to be better than Tron. I don't know if it's going to be better than Amulet Bloom. But, like, there are a lot of pieces, and at any moment they could print a card that just makes, like search for three Gates out of your deck and put them into play. It could be a card that they print that then just gets Maze's End closer and closer.
There's a lot of Destroy Lands cards that they keep printing, so it makes me concerned.
You have Loam, there are also, like, a lot of anti-Destroy Land cards being printed that are better in Gate decks than they are necessarily in, like, a Tron deck. For instance, there's the creature that can let you put lands from your graveyard and play, like, normal, or there's Loam, or there's Crucible Worlds. A lot of cards.
I forget what that guy's name is. Ramanop Excavator.
Yeah.
They should just reprint Teferi's Response. Do you remember that card? It's from...
No.
It's one of the weirdest, most busted old cards. It's from Invasion, I'm pretty certain. It's Invasion or Plane Shift. So it's one blue, one colorless instant. And it's a counter-target spell that targets a land you control. If that spell would destroy that land, draw two cards.
Okay.
So it's like two mana, counter your Assassin's Trophy, draw two.
Okay.
It's like so unbalanced and stupid, but like if it was, I would totally play the crap out of that card.
I don't know if I would play that card. Creeping Chill. Black and a 3 sorcery. Creeping Chill deals 3 damage to each opponent and you gain 3 life. When Creeping Chill is put in your graveyard from your library, you may exile it. If you do, Creeping Chill deals 3 damage to each opponent and you gain 3 life. So,
if I'm wrong, I'm already seeing this in decks, right?
No, it's already seeing play in Dredge. It's already a 4 of in Dredge decks this last weekend. I'm playing it in my Arclight Phoenix standard deck that's really dope. Like, I think people were really soft on this card at first. If you get to just cast 2 of these, you've now put your opponent on the back foot immediately.
Well, also...
And, like, you get them for free. It's a free spell. Like, anytime spells are free, they're good.
There's also a couple other reasons that I think this is so significant. So, like, the Dredge deck, a lot of what the Dredge deck is trying to do is connect a certain number of times with Prized Amalgams, right?
Right.
Like, you're just basically trying to get those things in play and set up a turn where your opponent doesn't have the defenses up or they didn't get there, and you just close it out with 3/3s.
Right.
So, if you mill 2 of these, it's like getting 2 free hits, and against some decks... The life gain is like getting in 4 free hits.
Right.
So it's like...
Well, it helps you stabilize in decks that are like spending the first 3 turns milling themselves so they're not actually doing anything. It gets you like damage in, and in Modern it's even more relevant where like you go from... Because really everyone starting life total in Modern is 18. So like it gets them down to 12, which is just like 1 hit with Prize Amalgams in. So it's just very efficient at kind of stabilizing and getting you there. Kind of does a little bit of everything you want. And the fact that you like just do it accidentally, like it costs you nothing to have this in your deck other than deck slots, is really, really, really relevant.
It's a little bit of a bummer that when you draw this card early, like
you're going to discard it
to like Insult and Neonate. You'll like discard it to things like that.
You can also cast it. It's still just like, it's still 4 mana. Like if you're casting it, you're winning by casting it, like or you're getting close enough that it'll win you the game, but it's not like a dead card in your hand.
Right.
I would say casting this, well, I think it's comparable to casting Narcomoebas, and I've casted many a Narcomoeba for my hand.
I think also this card will have more of a home later on as people figure out how to use it with cards like Mind Sculptor, where you can put it back on top and then mill it on purpose.
Well, I also think like the Arclight Phoenix decks are going to be a thing. Like that's something that we'll talk about Arclight Phoenix, and it's like slowly begun happening.
So we made like a good buy by picking those up.
Yeah, I'm happy about it. And this card's good in those decks because they're much more spell heavy. You want to have different spells in your deck. It's like having a large amount of creatures isn't as relevant than it is, say, in Dredge. So this card's even better there. So I do think this is like a totally just a modern staple card moving forward.
So this was Creeping Chill is one of the It's probably one of the premier cards from the set.
Maybe, yeah, I would pick up 4 of this.
Top 3, top 5.
Because I think it'll be seeing play in Eternal formats more than even standard, and I'm currently playing it in my standard deck, and it's bonkers. Like, because the way that deck works is you're milling yourself with the enchantment and all the cards that you're playing that mill yourself, all the surveil cards, and then you'll just get these into your graveyard. You stabilize, because the point, like, that deck doesn't really go off until turn 5, but by like getting yourself 6 life, putting them at 14, then like attacking with your 1/1 Narcomoebas in the interim, you eventually get in Arclight Phoenixes that just like swing for 12 and win you the game.
Yep.
All right, next premier card from this set. So last week I brought when we talked about it the first time, I brought this up and you were poo-pooing on it, and I'm actually now more convinced it could be this. Runaway Steamkin, red and a 1, creature elemental, 1/1. Whenever you cast a red spell, if Runaway Steamkin has fewer than 3 +1/+1 counters on it, put a +1/+1 counter on Runaway Steamkin. Remove 3 +1/+1 counters for Runaway Steamkin, add 3 red mana. This card has shown itself to be very good. Like, in standard, it is now one of the best cards in the format. In modern, it has already started showing up in different decks that are all, like, pretty powerful and, like, are seeing play. They're kind of a little bit of what we were trying to do back in the day with the Goblin Fecundity decks, where you're, like, kind of playing half Storm, half aggro, and it's seeing a lot of play in those decks. I think this has even larger applications. This, to me, feels like it could end up being close to being... with Young Pyromancer in contention for the 2-drop.
The red 2-drop?
Red 2-drop. And it's a rare, which is what matters.
I mean, that's the only reason that, like, it would really... That's the only reason that, Young Pyromancer is not just clearly the 2-drop.
But so, like, every other of the 2-drops dominated standard, except for Young Pyromancer. He was, like, a fine card in standard. It was never a powerhouse. This, so far... is one of the best cards in standard. So that to me leads me to believe that, and it is seeing play in modern. Like, that's the other piece. It's already deck lists are being posted about it.
Thanks, Tim Foley. Really nice stuff. He just said something in the chat.
No, I'm reading it. I really enjoy you guys' content, and I'm looking forward to more streams. Do you plan on streaming around the time each week? Is it just a random times? Our plan is to stream Tuesday mornings.
Yep.
That may eventually change. We are discussing maybe moving it to an evening time slot, but for the moment, moving forward, Tuesday mornings, unless you hear something differently.
10 a.m., that's when you... 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time is that's the current schedule.
Correct. Where'd that window go? I lost it. Okay. Anything on Steamkin?
I think this card's really sweet. I mean, it's reminiscent of that card Aisling the Pilgrim, but obviously a lot more powerful. It does a lot more. There's an elemental tribal thing going on that, like, I've been paying attention to for a long time because it's one of the most consistently revisited creature types.
Sure.
It's not, like, something where I right now, I'm like, I have a shell for an elemental deck because historically so many of the good elementals are so expensive.
Right.
They're really hard to cast. But you have a five-color elemental land to go along with all of the other five-color lands that make humans possible. So now you go even deeper, and things like every time they print a good elemental, I'm always just like, is there a chance that eventually this is going to be a thing where somebody busts out with the deck and...
Five-color elementals it. I mean, like, even Jerry T?
Yes.
Jerry T. It's never going to go well for me. Is like he's put, like I've seen him and other people post multiple lists where he's playing Gutshot, Manamorphose, Collective Brutality, Lightning Bolt, Flame Jab, Bedlam Reveler, Arclight. Like this is a Arclight Phoenix Runaway Steamkin deck that like is seeing, like there's a bunch of people talking about this card in Modern in different decks because I've also seen just like Mono Red Storm esque kind of shells where you're just using it to chain off more aggressive threats. I've seen them in this kind of deck. Like I think there's a lot of play here that's super exciting.
Cool.
I'm going to let you talk about this, but I'll read the card. Electric Static Field, one in a red, wall, defender. Whenever you cast an instant sorcery spells, it does one damage to each opponent. It's a 0/4.
Yeah, this card, it gets added to the redundancy that we currently have right now, which is Thermal Alchemist and this card and Firebrand Archer and cards that, you know, Gutter Snipe. These cards that trigger off of when you cast spells and they do direct damage as opposed to, like, Kiln Fiend, which, like, or Dragonauts or something like that where you need to be casting spells and then attacking. What's interesting about cards like this is because it's a passive threat, you can put it on the battlefield, and if you create an engine, which is like I've tried before with the Flame Jab Life from Loam deck, to create a repeatable engine where you can just be like incidentally dealing damage, it's fine. I like tested the list in my phone a bunch, and I'm not as stoked on it as I was.
Okay.
But I took out black from that list and squished it with blue, mm-hmm. and now I have a list that's playing like Thought Scours and Cantrips.
Which I was thinking about this, you should play Mission Briefing.
In that deck.
It's like really good in that deck. Because like specifically with this type of stuff where you can Missions Briefing into Missions Briefing into like Loam or into like the redundant secondary, not Gutshot, but the one drop red retrace card.
Flame Jab,
that like if you have two in your graveyard, you don't need two, you can Mission Brief away the second one. Like there's different cool stuff you can do with it.
I was playing this, and I put a Arclight Phoenix in the deck. It's interesting. I think that what's relevant about this card, actually this is kind of a fun thing, and I'll talk about it when Arclight Phoenix comes into play, but messing around with Pongify or Rapid Hybridization as a removal spell in Modern and having a 0/4 to block the creature you give them, so you've got a trigger off of it. You can also blow up your own Arclight Phoenix. Which then you get a 3/3 out of it, and then you just get Phoenix back.
Yeah, because you do it in the beginning of the turn. Something that is cool about Arclight Phoenix that's different than, say, Dredgevine or Vengevine, which I really love about Arclight Phoenix, is that Vengevine, as soon as you play that second creature spell, all of them come into play, and it doesn't, like, you, if, like, say, the second creature you play mills you, that won't count, that new Vengevine won't count based off that trigger. With Arclight Phoenix, it's just if you have cast three instant or sorcery spells at the beginning of combat, any that you got in your graveyard during that turn, even if they were there before the turn, even if like you cast two spells and then the third spell milled one into your deck, they all come in. So like the fact that there's a delayed trigger on them allows you to like really kind of maximize how many you get into play.
Like if you're playing Pongify as a removal spell, but like they're not playing a creature deck, you blow up your own Arclight Phoenix, play two more spells, then it comes back and attacks that same turn.
The fact that it has haste is also means that like you can sack them and bring them back, sack them. Like there's a lot of versatility with that specific timing.
Agreed. So next up, because we're not talking about Phoenix yet.
No. We're talking about Goblin Crater Maker. One in a red, Goblin Warrior, one sacrifice Goblin Crater Maker, choose one. Goblin Crater Maker deals two damage to target creature or destroy target colorless non-land permanent. It is a 2/2. This card's really good. I like have been more and more impressed with it. It is like very comparable to the green-white Exalted
Pride Lion, Mage. Quasali Pride
Mage. Quasali Pride Mage. And, like, it kills artifacts. I mean, like, there'll be a colored artifact that you can't kill, which is always going to be disappointing. But in trading for that, you get to kill anything that is two or less mana or two or less toughness.
Blowing up a Reality Smasher with this is good.
Yeah.
It's really
blowing
good.
Up a Karn with this is really good. Yeah. Blowing up a like the amount of threats at a Tron that this kills, and then also just like kills every X2 in the format.
This card gets me excited to go back to playing Superior Burning Cocoa, because like, this yeah. card feels like a really good fit.
Yeah, yeah. You like chain three Burning Tree Emissaries into this, and you're just like, oh, I have six power, and I'm going to kill anything that blocks it.
With the Fauna Shaman version of the deck, where you were like yeah. toolboxing and searching, like going up against like a Eldrazi Tron type of deck, this is like great. Right. You're like, all right, I'll just like end of turn, like, and then I'll vial it in and blow up your
claim flame, claiming him into play. Like you kill yeah. a thing, claim it, or if you need to like kill a X4, like. Do two damage, claim, do another two damage for like three mana, you kill a 4/4 is like fine.
Yeah,
like there's a lot of really cool versatile things that this does. And it's a 2/2. It's a 2/2. It's not a 2/1, which is just like weirdly good.
I agree.
I'm like very happy with this card, and I think it'll see a lot of play in Magic, be it Standard or Modern. Next is Nullhide Ferox, 2 green-green beast, hexproof. You can't cast non-creature spells. You may pay 2 to lose all abilities, and any player may activate that ability. If a spell or ability an opponent controls causes you to discard it, you may put it into play instead of putting it into your graveyard.
This card is a smorgasbord of weird abilities. It's like hard to really place. It's sort of similar to Obstinate Baloth in some ways.
I think it's worse than Obstinate Baloth. I've been talking about it, and I've been thinking about it. The fact that you gain life off of Obstinate is more relevant, I think, than randomly having hexproof. I think, and the fact that this like can be undone. Yes, it makes things cost 3 to kill it, but you could just pay 3 mana to kill it.
Wow, this thing is $9 right now.
Yeah,
people like it.
What's a mythic? That's actually pretty low for a mythic card that people think are going to be the new hotness.
People
right?
are still on this card.
I think so.
Oh, I thought in standard. Okay, yeah. Got it. Interesting.
I mean, standard is just insane. It's a 4-mana 6/6 that has hexproof.
Like. Right, you have to spend like mana and a spell to get rid of it.
Right, and they don't have like path, so it's like 4 mana to kill it or 5 mana to kill it.
Right,
which is a much better rate than a modern.
Fair.
Boop. All right, Gruesome Menagerie, black 3. So 3 colorless, black, sorcery, choose a creature card with converted mana cost 1 in your graveyard, then do the same for a creature card with converted mana cost 2 and 3, return those cards to the battlefield. This just reanimates the Kitchen Finks combo in its entirety for 5 mana.
It's like a fun one of in your deck, probably,
yeah.
If you wanted to in that deck. But the problem with that is, as great as that is, you have to be able to like get a 5-mana spell through a counter spell in a situation where you've probably already had all of those cards at some point in play, and they've and one of them didn't get pathed. Like, there's a lot of hoops you got to jump through for this not to just be something like.
Michael has a point.
The 4/6 exploits the DC, which I'd like rather have than this card.
Okay.
Hear me out. You can loop it with Eternal Witness.
That's true. Mr. Eternal Command over here.
That's a lot of value. you get Witness into play and you get it back.
Yeah, well, I think the other feature of it that makes me kind of interested is, A, I think it's a sideboard card against Jund if you're playing a Counters Company deck. Like, you bring it in against decks that are like going to be removing your creature spells. 2,
you
can tutor for it with the new Undergrowth Tutor.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit.
So, like, if
previous
that,
version of this,
if the Kitchen Finks type, because that finds all 3 pieces you need, or 2 of the 3 pieces you need for the combo, with if you are including the damage one. But if you're playing Kitchen Finks and Red Cap, that'll find Red Cap, but this could also find this that then gets everything back. I think there's something. I don't think it'll ever be a thing. I think people will try.
Yeah, like one of these. But that's what I was saying though. Like, interestingly enough, like. The Sidisi 4/6 that you exploit and Demonic Tutor with is like doesn't get you 3 creatures into play, but like it still feels more powerful to me and sure. and doesn't see play.
Next is Chamber Sentry X Construct 0/0. It's an artifact creature. When it enters the battlefield, it gets a +1/+1 for each color you spent to cast it, so it basically has domain. You may pay X to remove X +1/+1 counters, and it deals X damage to any target. And then for 5 mana, 1 of each color, you may return it from your graveyard to your hand.
Hear me out.
You can tutor for this with Talaria West.
No, yes. Okay.
Was that it?
In the Grand Architect Pili Pala deck, where you are probably playing a copy of Lightning Greaves, because Greaves allows you to cast your architect, then cast the Greaves, then suit up the architect, so he has...
Sure.
He's protected. This allows you to basically run this card out early, block with it, have it in your yard, whatever, do whatever you want with it, discard it to like a Thirst for Knowledge. And then the turn that you go off with your, what's it called?
Uh-huh.
Your Pili Pali Grand Architect, because it creates colored mana, this becomes your win condition from your graveyard. You don't need it in your hand anymore. And it has haste.
From your graveyard.
And it has haste because you are playing Lightning Greaves already. So you put it into play with five, give it haste, do five, set the whole thing.
Okay.
That'll never happen ever in a game.
The fact that it comes in, and you know, there are a bunch of things that deal with counters. So like ignoring all of the other text, but the fact that like plus one counter decks would maybe take advantage of this. And then you can also put counters on it to like, if you're unable to get through and you have a Ravager, you can take the plus one counters on Ravager to put it on this that just dome them from a distance. Like,
yeah,
it's a fireball because you have to pay X to do it, but it's not irrelevant.
Yeah.
Cool. Beast Whisperer, two green green elf druid. When you cast a non-creature spell, draw a card. It's a 2/3. It's an elf that lets you like that when you cast a creature spell, you draw a card.
It's a glimpse of nature creature.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, this is a thing that elf decks have always wanted. They don't have it.
You can put in the play off of Convoke spell too. What's it?
Off of Court of Calling?
Yeah, you can Court for it, which is really good. I think you play one of this and then you Court for it in the late game and you win well.
Yeah,
it's
really good. I mean, it's interesting because Beck was a card that when it got printed, people were like, will Beck be a thing in the elf decks? Will people just like
tried.
Pay one more mana than Glimpse? And the answer was no.
But it wasn't the one more mana. It was a blue mana and it's a spell in a deck that really like... Like, I think the fact that this is a elf creature
yeah.
is, like, relevant. Because, like, worst case scenario, you cast it, but, like, you have lords in play, and now you have, like, a 3/4 that you can attack with, like, or
yeah.
blocks for as a 2/3. So
I agree. I think it's significantly more relevant.
I think it'll see play as a 1/1 in elf decks at different times. I don't think it'll ever be, like, a 4/4, maybe a 2/2.
Somebody might go off on camera with us once, and then the understanding for a while will be it's, like, a 2 or 3/3.
Yeah.
But I think the good players will end up with this card as a 1/1.
Yeah, maybe 2. I can see 2 being the right space for it. It's also really good in EDH.
Thank you to the chat.
boop. All right, this is the last card we're talking about today. We've saved it for last. We've also talked about it a lot. It is the card I am most hyped on.
Arclight
Phoenix.
Surprising
no one. It's
1 red, 3 colorless, 3/2 flying haste Phoenix. At the beginning of combat on your turn, if you've cast 3 or more instant and sorcery spells, return Arclight Phoenix from your graveyard to the battlefield. There's a lot of really cool stuff with this card.
You know who really loves this card? Bedlam Reveler.
Yeah, they're really good together.
I'm really hyped on this. I think that this card is like a sleeper for Modern. I think that there are a lot of decks that really can take advantage of this in different ways. Now that I've actually gotten my hands and played with it, I'm even more hyped on it. You know, getting to cast 3 instants of sorceries in a deck is a lot easier than casting 2 creature spells in a deck that's trying to mill itself or put cards in your graveyard. Modern has so many more good 1-drop instants and sorceries that like will benefit off of this.
It plays so well alongside like the card, like all the staples, like Faithless Looting and this card are best friends.
Like Faithless Looting, like this, a deck with 4 Faithless Looting, 4 Thought Scour, Serum Visions, Bedlam Reveler, a Young Pyromancer, and that's it. Or a Manamorphos is like...
I think that deck is built on my phone right now.
Yeah.
mine's
maybe you
like
play Lingering
worse.
Souls and you're playing Mardu. Maybe you play...
Mine's playing Loam and Flame Jab.
Right.
And instead of Pyromancer, I'm playing that 0/4, the Electrostatic Field.
Right.
Pillar Field. I cut all the others. That's the only one that I left in.
I like can't think of a color combination with red that I don't like playing this card in.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, I mentioned it earlier, but the Pongify and or Rapid Hybridization plan,
right, is fine. Is a thing that's like not irrelevant. I think the fact like, getting free 3/3 flyers with haste before combat, just for like while you're doing control things on the side, is really good.
Yeah, super good. Yeah, the fact, I mean, you could just play 4 of these in like a pretty like spell heavy control deck, like without much
with else. Tassigers and Gurmag Anglers.
I
like,
mean, you could literally just play 4 Bedlam Reveler and 4 of this with just all control cards.
Yeah,
and you don't even really need like
as long as you're playing like you'll be playing cantrips because that's what these decks play. Like, I think you want to play stuff like the blue card. The not Snapcaster Mage. The
Mission Briefing.
Mission Briefing. Like, I think Mission Briefing is relevant with this card. I think, like, in Standard, there's a bunch of, like, with Surveil cards, this card is really good. But then, I don't know. I think it's, like, I'm very hyped on it in general.
I mean, Thought Scour with this card's crazy because, like, you right. play it and you get it in your yard and it already counts as a spell.
Like, and then this is just us, like, talking about, like, it adjacently being good. Like, you can even turbo it and start playing more hardcore, like, self-mill decks where you're playing that blue enchantment or you're playing Hedge and Crab or you're playing stuff that, like... And, like, part of the thing... As a person who's tried to get Vengevine to work a long time, to get Vengevine to work, you have to play with a bunch of bad one-drop creatures because the only way that card works is if you can play two creatures in a turn. And, like, most of the best self-mill cards are spells. The fact that this is more relevant with those spells is really exciting. The fact that this plus Bedlam Rover plus Lingering Souls is an insane card combo, regardless of whatever else you're doing, is, like, relevant. I've been impressed by it so far in testing, and I've been impressed by it.
Did you both buy 12 copies of it?
I did buy 12 copies of it.
The MM cast collectively owns 24 Arclight Phoenixes.
Yeah.
It's sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the new Spellskite. Not really. We just got to do some stuff first.
This might be my new Vengevine. Yeah. I mean, Vengevine's a card, and it's now in a deck, a real deck, and that's really exciting. But, like, the cards that you have to play are classically bad around it. This gets to be played with good cards. And I would say a 3-2 flyer is better than a 4-3 most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it has evasive haste.
Right, and we've talked, like, the worst case scenario of this card is you play it, like, they play Jace, they zero and brainstorm because they don't think you have anything, and then you cast this and it kills Jace.
Yep. So that is the last card that we are reviewing today. I think it's a pretty sweet set. I'm a fan. Quickly, before we wrap up here, because we talked about we were going to do this.
Well, two things. One, what's your favorite card in the set? You were unprepared for it. A Knight of Autumn?
I'm pretty sure. Okay. That card's so sweet. It's right. So, like, I do really like the Phoenix. I like Assassin's Trophy. There's some cards I like a lot, but, like, that card's just, like, mine.
Like, first off, I would say that this set, for Modern, I feel like there's just a large variety of cards that I'm excited about in many different ways. Like, everything, like, the fact that the Goblin that destroys colorless creatures is just a random card in this set that's probably going to see play, and that's, like... middle tier. I think Arclight Phoenix is my favorite card. I was like high on it last week, and then I got to play with it a lot this last weekend on like Arena and other places, even in Standard, and I'm in love with the card.
There's even cards like that we didn't mention that are like just like fun variations on limited mechanics.
Yeah.
Like Demote, is that what it's called? The one white aura for it's an uncommon, and their creature can't block and loses all abilities. Card's really good.
Yeah.
Cards like I was like thinking about playing that card, and I was like, is that like a reasonable card for Highlander? Like, can I put that in like an aggro deck?
Yeah,
like it does a lot.
It does a lot. Yeah, I'm excited about the set. So top ranking the mechanics. I think what's the it called the
Jumpstart?
Jumpstart is my favorite design, but I think it is the worst.
I agree completely. I think it's the weakest.
Though I think it might be deceiving because like even the like 2-mana Jumpstart draw card is like very versatile.
Yeah.
Like, I've always talked about how cards that let you discard a card as a purposeful mechanic let you do things that are powerful.
Totally.
As long as you know that that's a thing you can do. And so now having just that in, like, decks like Goryeo's Vengeance, I guess we didn't talk about that card. I think that card, I'm a little higher on it than I think I was when it first came out. Because, like, in Goryeo's Vengeance, it's an early game you draw a card, and then later in the game you can use it to discard important cards.
Right.
For, like, a really low cost.
2-mana sorcery or 2-mana instant?
2-mana instant. Which, like, if it was a sorcerer, I'd be less hyped on it. But an instant speed one is pretty good.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm a little higher on Jumpstart than I won. So, but do you want to top or bottom? What is Risk Cross? Oh, the three. Oh, you're right. I'm so annoyed that card. You were high on it. Did we talk about it? We talked about it last week.
What card?
Risk Factor. It's the Punisher card.
Oh, yeah. I love that card.
I, like, talked a lot of crap about it, and apparently now it's actually seeing play.
It's really good. It's a lot of abilities.
The fact that it, like, its benefit is that you do it to them twice. Yeah. So, like, either you get both sides, getting two of one of the sides is good regardless.
Yeah.
So, at worst, you're getting one of each side, and then it's fine.
Oh, you don't have to explain to me.
I'm explaining to the audience.
I explain to you.
That was my miss.
Yeah. Okay. You're so annoyed.
I hope that card never sees play again. I hope people are like, oh no, this is just bad. If that becomes a format defining card in any format, I'm going to be really unhappy with myself. Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. So Jumpstart has those two cards.
I think I agree with you. And I think it's the coolest, but the weakest.
So with that being said, I think Undergrowth is worse. I think if I were to bet money on the five mechanics, I think Undergrowth will see the least amount of play.
Well, it's just the simplest and requires you to do the most traditional thing. I think Mentor's kind of weak, too. It's good for limited, but it's like...
Sure.
It's like a lot of the cards, like the Goblin, that you can plus two, plus O something to trigger it. It's like, okay, but like I don't really care that much.
For Modern, like it's interesting how last week we ranked them when we lost the recording. It was number one was Convoke,
it's
think.
Just the most powerful,
and
yeah.
Then number two was Surveil, and the number three was...
Undergrowth, probably.
Undergrowth, and then Mentor and Jumpstart were kind of tied in the bottom. I think I've like moved Jumpstart up to number three, and Undergrowth and Mentor are kind of on the bottom. I do think that Mentor is going to have more cards see play with it than because the cards that have it, it's kind of like Exalted, where it's a random card that if this card is good, the fact that it has Mentor just kind of jumpstarts it to the next level, not necessarily that Mentor is the reason it's good.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a pretty fair ranking. I think like it's Jumpstart. You've played a bit more. You've been playing a lot of Arena, I know. I haven't gotten to play with it other than the pre-release yet.
Sure.
So the power of the cards that they've printed, it just for me, it's just like not quite where I want it to be. It's like even paying two mana instant speed to discard something relevant is like you're still spending two mana for that ability. So like still a lot. Still a lot sure. to just draw a card. Like you have to then have mana to the next thing. So yeah, I would say maybe third. Probably third or fourth for me.
Okay.
Those are my...
I think it's Convoke and Surveil. I think Surveil is the best new mechanic, and then Convoke is just one of the best mechanics probably ever printed in history.
Cost reducer. Who would have thought?
It's like a fair one. It's one they are willing to bring back. It's not like...
Yeah.
It's not like Delver.
Yeah, that was nuts.
And Phyrexian mana, which we'll never see again.
So that's going to wrap up our set review, part two here on the Masters of Modern. Thank you guys so much for listening, watching, being a part of this. Like, subscribe, all the things to the YouTube. It's the most important thing.
Yep.
We do have a Patreon, patreon.com/TheMMCast. And there's pretty soon going to start being some exclusive stuff behind that paywall.
Yeah.
So I've been talking about it now for a few weeks, streaming on Modo. And unfortunately, this game called Clash Royale has destroyed me, and I like play it a lot, and so I have been like lagging on getting going with this. But what I'm gonna probably do is place my first couple streams behind the Patreon so that I can't embarrass myself too publicly, and then once I have a couple of, you know, like dailies that I streamed and my mechanics are a little better, I'll start being a little more public. So
okay.
Patreon.com/TheMMCast. It's how we're going to continue doing stuff and expanding
yep.
and getting to the next level. It's very
perfect.
Helpful.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We have a big Facebook group. That's where the modern conversation is happening. If you have a cool deck list idea, we really encourage off the wall ideas. And definitely subscribe on YouTube. It's now the best place to follow us. We are still on iTunes. We are still at collected.company. So make sure to check those stuff out there as well. But the best place to kind of watch is on YouTube. So make sure to subscribe. If you're watching right now on the live stream, make sure to subscribe and make sure to leave a comment. So I think the comment question for this week is going to be, what's your favorite card in the set?
Yeah,
what card are
the
you most excited?
Yeah, what's the best card in the set? What are you most hyped about? Also, I mentioned it at the end of last week's episode on the plug for part two, but we're going to do some brews next week. So next week, we're going to be talking about brews with the cards from the set
yep.
and actually building decks and talking about them a little bit more completely. So stay tuned for that. And
thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Talk to you guys next week.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to themmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.